Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests. Today, my guest is the Reverend Mitch Hescox, and we're going to be talking about mercury and the unborn. Approximately one in every six babies in the USA are born with harmful mercury levels in their blood. Consumption of fish contaminated by mercury is the main route of human exposure. The mercury drops from the air into the water system, where fish that is eaten eventually take it up. Mercury is extremely toxic to the brain and nervous system, especially to the rapidly developing brain of the unborn child during early pregnancy. When a pregnant woman eats mercury-contaminated fish, the mercury in the fish enters the mother's bloodstream. Once in the mother's bloodstream, mercury can move directly across the placenta to enter the body of her unborn child. One of the body's protective shields against damage to the brain, called the blood-brain barrier, is not fully developed until the first year of life. Thus, in the unborn child, mercury can cross this incomplete barrier and accumulate in the brain, causing developmental disabilities and brain damage, resulting in lowered intelligence and learning problems. This has lifetime implications, and one study found that the resulting loss of intelligence causes diminished economic productivity that persists over the entire lifetime of these children. The unborn are also being harmed by air pollution that will be reduced as a co-benefit of the mercury standard. This pollution has been linked to birth defects, lowered birth weight, premature births, stillbirths, and infant deaths. The Evangelical Environmental Network is a ministry dedicated to the care of God's creation. The Reverend Mitch Hescox serves as president and CEO of the Evangelical Environmental Network, publisher of Creation Care magazine. He has testified before Congress, appeared on CNN, NPR, PRI, and numerous radio programs, both Christian and secular. He's also been named one of the 10 environmental religious saints by the Huffington Post. So I would like to welcome to the show Reverend Mitch Hescox. Good afternoon and happy Easter.
Well, thank you, June. I appreciate being here. It is awesome to be on your show, and it's just wonderful to be part of, hopefully, your listener audience, to share my faith and why we do what we do, and obviously for all of us to rally around to protect our children and all of us from toxic chemicals and other forms of environmental damage that affects the whole world and the population of the whole world.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that people still have this perception that when it comes to environmental issues, it's either an issue for the left or it's some religious issue, or, you know, it doesn't make any sense, because the bottom line is that when it comes to the environment, it affects each and every one of us. So, you know, when it comes to anybody that is doing something to raise awareness and do something positive to help people and to also educate people, I think these folks should be supported. And that's one of the reasons why I am so glad that you are here today, and also to help celebrate or kick off the Easter season with the audience. I know that there are many people out there that are going to be celebrating this weekend and for the next several weeks to come. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show today.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. And I'm just, excuse me, I'm glad to be here because, you know, sharing my faith and talking about the church and people of faith. And, you know, for us, you know, we're supposed to be the first environmentalists. You know, in our scriptures, our holy book, you can go to Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, and it says that we're called to tend and care for the garden. So, you know, right in the beginning of our holy work, you know, we're commanded to be good stewards. And, you know, I think that's one of the messages that we'd like to get across is that we have a lot in common with people who maybe not be of faith, but for people of faith, one of the first priorities is caring for God's creation. And especially for us, in our terminology, we have a little saying at my organization that creation care is a matter of life. And what we mean by that is how we care about God's creation, plants, water, animals, really determines how we care about human life. Because how we care about the earth, the environment, really dictates what we really believe about human life.
Now, on that note, I'd also like to mention that I'm a little surprised that there's so many people out there that are concerned about plants, that are concerned about animals, but don't have that same regard for human life, and I just find that a little disturbing, but that's my own observation.
Well, and I think that that's part of, and not that we're not supposed to care for animals, and not that we're supposed to care for plants, but to us, and me especially as a person of faith, I think that's what's, quite honestly, that's what got the separation, especially in the evangelical church and maybe other Christians, when they saw people focusing in on what they would say is earth worship or lifting up the earth above human beings, that those tended to put a fracture between those who really cared about the earth and stewardship and environmental concerns and people, some people of faith, especially my more conservative brothers and sisters. It's we don't want to replace God, and we don't. God, we worship God, but he's commanded us to care for the earth. Because, again, turning back to Genesis, I believe that God created a world, a planet, that was sustainable. Genesis chapter 1, verses 28 to 30 talks about how God made a planet for birds, for animals, for life, that there would be enough food for all things, for all people, for all animals, if we would care for it properly. And so it's an issue of sustainability. It was designed that way, and I believe that with all my heart. And unfortunately, because of our sin, our mistakes, our sometimes looking for other priorities, we've taken away this sustainable planet. I mean, one of the things that just is shocking to me is that we lose in the United States about 10% of our topsoil a year. Some people say as high as 20. In Africa, we're losing topsoil at the rate of 40% a year.
Wow.
We will not have topsoil in 25 or 30 years if we continue the way we're operating. In the United States, it's primarily due to one of the largest is mechanized agriculture, the overuse of nitrogen fertilizers and not, you know, putting nitrogen back into the soil the God way, the natural way. So, excuse me, I was just out on the golf course. I think I'm a little dried out here, but
especially with the fact that we are pounding the earth with all sorts of chemicals, and especially with, if I can just briefly talk about this, especially with the new agrotechnologies that are pushing. These neonicotinoids, which are systemic pesticides, in conjunction with the GMOs. I mean, it's a dynamic duo that is really devastating the earth, not to mention wiping out the honeybees. And this is a huge problem. People don't seem to understand what's going on until they have a reason to. And that is really what's unfortunate. But the bottom line is that there are so many people that are speaking out about this. And once again, it's not an issue that belongs to a particular faith, a particular political group or not. It belongs to everyone. Every human being has an obligation to be concerned about this and to take action about it because, you know, it's our earth. We need to do something about it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are just like, you know, let somebody else deal with it, or they just don't think that it's a big deal. I've even had some folks reach out to me that have said, you know, I'm still not convinced. And it's amazing that people have that mentality.
Well, just yesterday, and I haven't read the paper in detail, so I won't be an expert, but there was a new study that came out on organic phosphate pesticides that says that now that the levels are found in the study that they did in women's bodies in the United States, that's causing low birth weight, reduced gestation periods, and basically it's comparable to a woman who has smoked throughout her pregnancy.
Wow.
And, you know, this is published in Environmental Health Perspectives, you know, not a ultra-liberal paper, but a scientific study. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to drive home to people is that how we use chemicals, whether they be pesticides, whether they be putting mercury in the air from coal-fired power stations, there are consequences. And the most severe consequences they are to our unborn children and our newly born infants, because they're not just little adults. Their bodies behave, and, you know, I'm not a physician, but I know from my reading that, you know, they metabolize things so much faster. They don't have the developed kidneys and liver to process and get rid of some of these toxins. And especially, you know, what people thought that the placenta, as you mentioned earlier, was the great stoppage of all chemicals, is proving out to be completely false. It's just, you know, whatever a woman takes into her body makes its way into her child.
Well, Mitch, I think the problem is that people are stuck on old data. They're stuck on old studies. I mean, I was just interviewed recently and was asked the question, well, is there a top 10 list of foods, organic foods, that people should always buy? And then, you know, are there other foods where you can compromise? And I don't believe that the host of the show appreciated my answer, because I was very honest and said, you should only buy organic. And I guess they're still holding on to old data, and the bottom line is the technology has advanced. I mean, if you think about it, that makes perfect sense that it would advance, especially since it's a very, very profitable sector, and the more aggressive the technology can be, why not? But the bottom line is that we need to consistently educate ourselves and other people so that people can understand that, you know, maybe that might have been the case 50 years ago, but in this day and age, with the new technology that has emerged, especially, you know, once again, I'm going to refer to the neonicotinoids. The neonicotinoids, it's a whole new family of pesticides. It's, you know, it's absorbed into the plant's vascular system. So the bottom line is that any fruit that's produced, it's not on the skin. It's not something that you can wash off. It's in the fruit. And, you know, this isn't my opinion. There are studies out there, including research done by Dr. Hank Tenekes in the Netherlands. Harvard just recently published a study. Purdue also published a study, and I had the luxury of interviewing Dr. Christian Krupke a couple of weeks ago. And the information is out, but, you know, the EPA is still not convinced, and hopefully we can change that, especially with all the public concern and all the different petitions and just the demonstrations, so on and so forth, to get these chemicals, you know, just off the market. But getting back to what you're saying, with the information that's out there, I mean, when it comes to educating women, especially pregnant women or women that are looking to start a family, what information is out there, and who's disseminating this information?
Well, I think, you know, as far as I can't answer all those questions, but I think that I know who hasn't. I mean, at least from my wife and my daughters, who have both given birth in the past 5 years to children, the one thing that I can say that on the mercury that we're finding out is that doctors have been very good at saying, you know, limit the amount of fish you eat. because, you know, the omega-3s that are in fish are highly beneficial, but we have to be cautious. You know, one meal a week maximum. And I think those are things that we really need to focus in on. And especially if you're eating locally caught fish, to be a smart enough consumer to go to each state's website, their whatever their Office of Environmental Protection is, and find out what's in the water. I live in Pennsylvania. I actually watched a man fishing in a stream last year that said, do not eat any fish from it. Don't even catch them. And he was fishing there. And so I went back home and found out that particular stream, it was feeding into the Schuylkill River in Valley Forge, is contaminated with PCBs and mercury. But there are still a tremendous amount of people in the United States, especially those who are living on the margins, that depend on locally caught fish for a source of protein. And we need to stop it. 40% of the fresh water in the United States is contaminated with mercury. 40%.
Wow.
It's disgraceful. And one of the things we don't know is there has not been a large amount of data of ocean fishing of how much mercury is contaminated, especially in near coastal waters, because there's been a lot of resistance from the commercial fishing industry to actually test the waters.
I can't understand why anybody would eat fish coming from the ocean. I mean, I will mention I am a vegan, but beside the point, I mean, I don't expect everybody to do the things that I do, but it's just from a health perspective. The BP oil spill, it's not like it was 50 years ago. This just happened, and people are eating lobster, they're eating shrimp, they're eating all the bottom dwellers, and I just don't understand why. I mean, it's not like the environment is just going to clean itself up. That was such a disaster, and you know, the water's still contaminated. It is mind-blowing that people still consume fish from there.
And you know, from my perspective, God's provided a way for those things to be cleaned up, but it will take 8 to 10 years after we start dumping so many chemicals into it to really get a start on it. And that's something that we just have to be aware of. You know, we've seen studies from Florida and Massachusetts where the waters have cleaned up because of just of natural cycles of renewing, of flushing it out to the ocean in some cases and being diluted, other times just being broken down. But mercury, especially lead, arsenic, all the heavy metals, last an extremely hard time, long time, excuse me. And we need to be aware of that. That's why we need to stop pumping them out into our air, pouring them into our water, and getting involved. But one thing I would like to say back on to all kinds of agriculture and farming, one thing that I feel very strongly about is, you're right, we need to educate people, but we also need to take responsibility for ourselves. When, you know, I'm 55 years old today, so I'm, you know, the end of the baby boomer generation. When I was growing up, we still had our own family garden.
Yes.
We canned our own vegetables. My daughter, who lives in the city of Portland, Oregon, you know, now does the same thing living in a small house in the city because she wants to renew that, return to that. You know, for the sake of convenience, for the sake of the lifestyle that we as a nation have chosen to live, we have some culpability in some of these decisions of how we grow and eat our food. And if there is one thing that I can encourage people to do is start. I mean, I don't care if you live in an apartment, you know, you can grow some of your own food. Get involved and have a community garden. Do some things that you can do that where you can control what's put into the soil, what type of seeds are purchased, and how you grow your food, and take charge of your life. We don't have to be dependent upon all the big industrial farming or other things. We can return to a more simple lifestyle if we're willing to allow, to give ourselves some of the time to do that.
And what's interesting is that there are many people out there that are trying to educate communities such as Sweetwater. I had the founder, James Godsell, on recently, and what Sweetwater does is they help communities build aquaponic systems. And basically what aquaponics is, it's not hydroponics, it's aquaponics. And you're growing food organically. You can't use pesticides; it'll kill the fish. But it's a nice little system that you can actually set up either on a small scale, where you're using recycled materials or materials that might otherwise wind up in a landfill. And I also had Suzanne Friend on from Friendly Aquaponics in Hawaii, and all they do is conduct classes and educate people about how to build these models. And the thing is that if you're located in an area where you have either poor soil or if you have limited water, the aquaponics method of growing food is really fantastic, and there are a number of models that utilize solar and alternative energy so that you do not need to use any fossil fuels whatsoever. And what's nice about it is that it enables you to grow your own food, and whatever food and whatever you choose to grow, you can do just that. And I agree, the more that we reconnect and take responsibility for how our food is grown, then we can really make significant change as a society.
Absolutely. And even with the EPA and the other government regulatory things, what we need to do as a people is to stand up. You know, we certainly have battles to fight against some big industry that would like to stop some of these regulations and changes to put through. But guess what? If we gather around, all of your listeners, people of faith, anybody concerned about the health of our children, the health of ourselves, if we rally around, we can get things done to put the kind of proper laws and regulations out there to stop some of these things from happening. Plus, if we're taking charge of our own lives, then we can also decrease the demand for these other things. So we can do things two ways. We can make a market decision and grow our own food or buy organics, and we can rally up to change and put pressure on those policymakers to do it. And it works. We can do that, but we have to stand together. We have to rally together.
I just want to mention something that came in from the audience. I received a really sweet email from a gentleman named Mike Brown, who sent me a graphic that shows an image of food and an image of GMOs, and it says, God made organisms, and man made genetically modified organisms. Who do you trust? And, you know, it's a very powerful image, because, you know, it makes you think. Do you trust something that has been created in a laboratory? And people don't even understand the fact that with GMOs, you're not breeding. You are basically crossing species, and they're facilitating the process with a virus. And we don't know what's going to happen after consuming even a portion of it, what it's going to do to our bodies in years to come. And that is the big problem. And with the push for GMO labeling, it's just amazing that they're fighting this tooth and nail, because they don't want people to know how many ingredients are derived from genetically modified crops.
Absolutely.
Now, in conjunction with the awareness with mercury, is it state by state that has the advisory information, or, I mean, is there anything on the federal website? I'm just curious. And also, what about the imported fish? I mean, who controls that?
The answer is nobody, quite honestly. On the answer to your first question, if you go to EPA/mercury, you'll find highlighted the states that have mercury fish consumption advisories, which are all. But in all honesty, to go to specific rivers, lakes, and the other contaminants, you need to go by a state-by-state basis to go to their Department of Environmental Protection or whatever the local state is to get that information for particular bodies of water. And so it's out there. There are advisories in all 50 states, but you need to do your homework to get to them.
Thank you. Mitch, we do have a call, so Let's take the call. Hello, caller, do you have a question for Mitch?
Actually, you know, I'm very interested in the topic that you're talking about. You know, I want to know a little more about the mercury that's in the fluorescent light bulbs and how it affects our children in the schools.
Actually, I can answer that one pretty quickly. The older versions of fluorescent light bulbs have a great amount of mercury in it, and they need to be replaced. If you're talking about the movement towards the compact fluorescent light bulbs, the advantage of it for every compact fluorescent light bulb actually saves the amount of mercury being emitted from a coal-fired generating station. So you're actually reducing the levels of mercury by using CFLs. That said, my own personal preference is they're a little more expensive if they're coming down, you get the energy efficiency and no mercury by going to LEDs. So CFLs actually reduce total mercury, but if you can afford them and, you know, go to some of the local stops and buy the LEDs. In my home, we have a combination of CFLs, and as they do go out, we properly dispose of them. There are great guidelines in places to dispose of them properly so they don't get returned into the soil, but then we replace them with LEDs.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. Now, Mitch, I want to I'd like to just talk a little bit more about the work of the EEN as far as getting information out there, especially to the pregnant women and also mothers that are or women that are looking to become mothers. Can you just talk about some of the initiatives that your organization has?
Sure. Well, right now one of our biggest things has been, because it's still very hot in the news, is the reduction of mercury from coal-fired utilities and industrial boilers that burn primarily coal. They're responsible, coal-fired boilers for the utilities are responsible about 50% of our national mercury emissions, and industrial boilers about another 20%. The rest of it comes from other forms of energy and release, forest fires, some naturally occurring things. So we've been working very hard to get these regulations put on the books. And what happened is, back in 1990, a bipartisan Congress under the first President Bush reinstituted or made the new Clean Air Act. And that's 22 years ago now. And just now, after 22 years, we are starting to get some of the regulations that Congress authorized and put down to protect our children and are happening. And they have not happened because there's been a lot of industry pressure not to control these harmful substances like mercury, reducing the amount of particulate matter, lead. And so there's been a big fight. And obviously right now in Congress, there is many members of Congress who are more willing to listen to big utility interests at times than they are interested in protecting, in my opinion, human health. That's where I testified recently at Congress over, is that they wanted to kill these bills that would stop mercury. And it's a shame because, you know, they cost money to put these controls on coal-fired power plants. It will cost the average household owner across the United States $3 to $4 a month in a higher electric bill to put these controls on, but the payback in medical costs are about 9 to 1. So I think most of us would like that kind of return, and I don't know too many people that would not be willing to pay $50 a year to help reduce mercury that literally impacts 1 in 6 children in the United States.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I was going to say, you know, it's interesting. I've never been a big fan of the government and everybody's business, but the bottom line is that when it comes to certain issues, unfortunately, we need the government to step in to say, okay, well, you need to do this, this, and this, because unfortunately there are folks out there that will basically go to town because they don't have anybody to tell them, no, you can't do this. And to me, it seems like a wayward teenager where, unless the parent has, you know, the firm hand and says, okay, this is your curfew, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, kid's going to do whatever he or she wants. And when it comes to certain technologies, certain sectors, unfortunately, because the industry hasn't regulated itself, it's at a point where, okay, well, now we have to go back to mom and dad and get them involved. And you can see this in so many different sectors. It's ridiculous. And it's a shame that it's gotten to this point. But unfortunately, without certain regulations in place, it's just going to continue. And the sad thing is that the companies that are creating these problems, they're exposed to the same environmental issues that everybody else is. So you would think that they would want to take some initiative to do things the right way. But unfortunately, their only obligation by law is to make money for their shareholders. And instead of being accountable for what their products are doing, they're letting it get to the point where they're being forced to do so. And I think that's a shame.
Well, and I think that's right. And I think your description is pretty apt. The way I like to describe it is that we need some common collective boundaries that work. And for me, the best example is speed limits. You know, even though there are people that go on highways and don't obey the speed limits, if they get caught, they're subject to a penalty. But what would be the roads like around your home, among my home, if anybody could do whatever speed limit they wanted to do? It would cause havoc. It would be anarchy. And I think the same is true with reasonable regulations. Again, I freely admit that I'm a registered Republican. I'm a more conservative than I am liberal in many things. But I also realize that we need to have a common set of boundaries, especially, let's go back to the Clean Air Act. It was authorized in 1990. This is 2012, and we still do not have in place laws that would protect our kids, protect human health for 22 years because we've had people fighting against protecting our kids for 25 years in lieu of profits. And I think those are some things that I'm not saying the profits aren't a good thing. I mean, I was a businessman for a while myself. But we have to factor in the true cost of things. And that's where I'd like to see us go. If we're going to make decisions based on a market economy, then let's throw in and calculate the true things. I just read a paper this morning that said if we would add in the cost of medical problems, lifetime life expectancy decreases, loss of jobs from the burning of coal in the United States, it would double the price of electricity. Basically, it would go 9 cents a kilowatt more per hour is its true cost. And then we can make good decisions on what kind of electricity, what kind of energy do we need. You know, let's get the true cost out there so we can make really good decisions that can help our economy, that can help the United States grow, but also can be sustainable. For me, I ask people the question all the time, if there is one thing in the world that drives everything else, what is it? And for me, it's energy, because if you have sustainable energy, you can teach kids better. You can get water out of the deepest parts of the earth with powerful wells. You can put more water into farmlands, but it has to be sustainable so it doesn't cause other problems. So that's, I guess, one of our biggest concerns and fights is how do we use energy properly that doesn't pollute, that doesn't fill our fish full of mercury, that doesn't fill streams full of PCBs or lead, that doesn't emit, fracking is one of the big things that we'll be addressing shortly, and especially the chemicals that are used in that. Natural gas is a pretty clean energy source, but I'm not so sure that putting ethylene glycol into the ground, along with the other things, is a really good public health thing. And so we need to address those. We need to be cognizant of those things. And we just can't be so dependent, addicted to fossil fuels and other forms of energy that we just don't wake up and realize what it's doing to our children and our nation and actually the whole world.
Well, unfortunately, as we've seen throughout the last several decades, the environment has seems to have played this role as a scapegoat, if you will, where maybe not a scapegoat, but just a way to just get out of taking responsibility for issues that a corporation is not necessarily prepared to deal with. And I just want to mention also that I'm not anti-business. I'm not anti-money. I think everybody should own their own business. And I've said this time and time again. Everybody should have their own version of the American dream. Why not? But what I am against is irresponsibility. And if you look at the way that different corporations have basically dumped waste into the land, thinking, well, you know what, it'll clean itself up or let somebody else deal with it, and then all of a sudden, within a short space of time, there are issues with cancer or other diseases, and inevitably, the people that live in that area will pay that price. So the bottom line is that the responsibility really needs to be addressed, and there needs to be more accountability for specific industries where they're working with materials or produce waste, or should I say generate waste, that needs to be handled properly. And unfortunately, we just don't see too much of that.
Well, and I think, you know, we saw a great, you know, after I'm old enough to remember the Love Canal, you know, in the 1970s brought great environmental awareness in the United States. And I think even up through the early 80s, we had a great movement of doing that. And then we started to turn a little bit the other way. We started to say that, you know, businesses weren't going to do that. Well, just like all human beings, people sin. They make mistakes, or they make poor choices, or they make the wrong choices. And what we'd like to see, and like we're working to, is let's have those kind of moral decisions that protect people, that help us to realize the real cost of what it does to do something. Like, I don't believe you would not be very happy if your neighbor took all of their trash and dumped it over in your yard and just left it there and expected you to deal with it.
And
that's basically what we've allowed to happen for so many industries. We've allowed industries across the board to dump their trash into our yards without any accountability, without paying for it. And now who's paying the price? It's our health. You know, one of the most staggering statistics that is out there today, and, you know, coming from a man, this may not be as impactful as coming from a woman, but right now, 1 in 8 women in the United States will get breast cancer. 1 in 8. Less than a generation ago, that was 1 in 20. Anecdotally, I do a lot with pastors in Africa who are battling other problems and from things like climate change. And one of the things we talk about is that, you know, in Africa, and there are a lot of other diseases and environmental impacts there, but breast cancer basically doesn't exist because they don't have the chemicals. I mean, they have enough of other problems, but things like those types of cancers just simply don't exist. And so what's the difference? You know,
well, you have an area where you're exposed to different chemicals, and then you have another area where they're not exposed to the chemicals. I mean, it's a very easy thing to see.
And it's right. It's like that, you know, the Toxic, you know, Safety Chemicals Control Act. It's been around for basically, I think it was 1996 was the first toxic. I'm trying to think of the exact name of it, but basically back in 1970s, we came up with a law that would control the amount of toxic chemicals and evaluate them before they're put in the market. It's a law that's not been changed since 1976, and I think it's only evaluated, you know, a couple dozen real chemicals, and there are now, you know, like 75,000 different chemicals on the market. It's called the Toxic Substance Control Act. And, you know, the way the law is written is basically self-regulating. you don't have to prove that something, or show that something is good or doesn't harm before you put it on the market. So it's sort of put it on the market, find out what happens, and then you can pull it back off and then be sued or whatever the case is. And I think that's sort of preposterous, that, and that legislation is stalled in the Senate right now, and all through the House, because nobody wants to do another regulation. But how do we deal as a society with those 75,000 chemicals that just get spewed into our environment?
Well, it's like with everything else. I mean, you look at the situation with the GMOs and the neonicotinoids. You know, these chemicals have been allowed into agriculture, and they're trying to say that everything's fine. And you have so many people, including scientists, that are saying, no, it's not. Don't do this. And the bottom line is until we get to a point in society where people work together and they say, okay, enough is enough, we don't want this, then they will bring about the change. And, I mean, you see it with so many other issues that are not health-related that are completely ridiculous. And if things are changed overnight, literally, you get somebody that's really ticked off, they hit a nerve, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a big change. And with things that pertain to our health, especially with children, it seems as though it takes this, this enormous effort that needs to take place over a very long period of time in order to facilitate the necessary change that we need.
And I think that's exactly where we have to go, is we have to develop a true grassroots network of people that want to have change, that want to lift up change, and that want to do things a different way. But one of those are going to be this basic, I think it is going to require a lifestyle change. It's going to require us evaluating what's really important in our lives. And I think that's where people of faith really need to step in and say, you know, are these good discipleship? Are these good moral faith-based decisions? How we're caring about the earth, how we're caring about our children, even how we're caring about, you know, who we are as a people. And those are long issues, and, you know, we could probably talk about those for hours and hours. But we need to develop and work together. And I'm an evangelical Christian, and I make no bones about that. But I can work together with other people, too. You know, it was interesting. I had the honor of speaking when the first, it's called the MATSRL, Mercury and Air Toxic Standards, was actually promulgated, when it was made effective into law back in December before Christmas. I got the opportunity to stand up and speak with Lisa Jackson, the administrator of the EPA. Sorry about that, Lisa. And, you know, in my lunch was, you know, I looked at her, and she is a person of faith, but has some little different values than I do, especially on things like pro-life, which I am considerably pro-life, but I'm pro-life whole life. And I said, you know, we may not agree on everything, but we can agree on the need to protect children. And I think that's where people of faith, whether you're Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, or have no faith, we can agree that we need to protect our children. And then we can find those common bounds. Instead of finding the things that break us, let's find the things that bring us together. And for me, that's the love of Christ. But, you know, and I can work with other people because of that. Jesus said, you know, we're to love our neighbor. He didn't say to love our Christian neighbor or anybody else, but he said to love our neighbor. So whoever is our neighbor worldwide, we need to work with, we need to protect, we need to love. And, you know, I'll use those opportunities to demonstrate who I am in Christ, and if people want to decide to join and follow Christ, that's, we can work on that together. But the important thing is, the beginning thing is, let's do the things that are protecting our children, that are not allowing them to have the kind of life we want them to have, that I believe God created them to have. When you take IQ points away from children, can they succeed to be the best God wanted them to be? If they have asthma, chronic asthma, or heart conditions, or cancers, they're not having the opportunity to have the life that God intended them to have. And that's why, for me, this is a moral, faith-filled, biblical question. All of the toxins we've been talking about. I mean, I'm passionate about this, and you can tell that.
Mm.
I mean, I love the Lord, you know, God, all my heart. I know Jesus is the God that I know best, but he's called me to be part of this work together of protecting the least among these, those that are really, truly need our help and need protection. And, you know, it just, one of the images of, you know, going back to mercury and actually all environmental toxins that just is, I actually go to bed some nights thinking about this. Mercury, other heavy metals, and other things that are in adults, how the body gets rid of them is just like we get rid of all of our other waste. We go down to the little room and use the white throat. But, you know, a baby in utero doesn't do that.
Mm.
So a child for 40 weeks is recirculating these toxins, whether it be mercury or arsenic or, you know, the whole range of other organic chemicals that are out there. They're circulating them inside their small brains, in their hearts, and they can't get rid of them. Mercury, for example, you know, and this has been proven on lots of studies, the amount of mercury that's in the cord blood, which represents the actual, you know, fetal blood, the blood of the child, is definitely two and sometimes as much as four times that of their mother, because they just can't get rid of it. And so we need to think about those terms, and that's one of the things that makes, you know, unborn children so special, is they have no way to get rid of this junk. And it's literally tearing them up.
Well, the bottom line is that they can't speak for themselves. And the thing is that if the adults are the ones that are creating these problems, we have to take responsibility for the actions, whether it's our actions or address the actions of others, to make sure that those that cannot speak for themselves are protected. And, you know, I say that about humans, I say that about animals, I say that about all God's creatures. And I may not be a reverend, well, I'm definitely not a reverend, but I also believe the same thing, that, you know, it's it doesn't matter what you believe in, whether you have a belief in anything, it's your responsibility as a human being to make sure that, you know, we're doing everything that we can to protect not only ourselves, but the people that we love. I mean, just because, for folks out there that may have different beliefs, whatnot, maybe you don't have children and you don't want to have a family. You know, that's your choice. But the thing is that there's got to be somebody out in this world that you do love, that you do care for. Why should they be exposed to this? And that is basically what I try to encourage people to think about. And you would think that there would be more of an outcry from the different religious communities when it comes to the environmental issues, especially with GMOs and with the neonicotinoids. And it's nice to see that there is an increased involvement as far as awareness and advocacy. But, you know, where do you intend to go as far as getting the message out to more and more people, Mitch?
Well, we're constantly doing that. I mean, our staff, I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the National Association of Evangelicals, and we work with them. You know, in my community, the evangelical community, we're constantly educating, speaking at churches, our website, our magazine, Creation Care. So we're continually, you know, we've been doing this since 1993, and especially in the evangelical church, which has had a sort of a tradition of not trusting science too well, we've made great strides, especially among, you know, people my age and younger, of really lifting these concerns of environmental health up and making people aware. And so it's a constant effort of speaking, talking on radio shows, writing books, whatever we can do to really to educate people that we need to stand up and make a difference. And again, I want to reiterate that we need to make a difference in public policy, and we need to make a difference in our own lifestyle. And I think those things are the message of what we need to be. You know, it's interesting. you know, you're talking about a biblical perspective, is that, you know, sustainability has been a long part of the Bible. You know, first in Genesis, the way God created it. And then for people of faith, whether you're Jewish or Christian, it's really kind of fun to go back and look at Leviticus and look at the ways of caring for animals and caring for the land. There were some very early, very good sustainable farming practices listed right there. You know, and it was already then God was setting down some rules to really protect this creation that he made, so it can continue to feed us and to clothe us and to help us to live the abundant life, the joy-filled life that God would like every citizen of the world to have. And so I think those are really common things that we need to focus on, of the back to living sustainably, that can help us and help our whole world and every child, every one of God's children that's here, to live a better, more productive life. And and I want that around the world, whether it's a child in Africa or Bangladesh or here in the United States.
Mitch, can you tell our audience how they can subscribe to your magazine?
The easiest thing is to go to our website, www.creationcare.org, and you'll find a way to subscribe to Creation Care. You can see all sorts of information on there. If you go to our Mercury page, for instance, you can see the advisories and the recommendations for women who are pregnant or planning to get pregnant for Mercury, the what fish to eat, what fish not to eat. So we try to keep that updated as, and updated and very current on the latest things that we're working on. But again, we, like anybody else, we choose to work on certain things that we believe God is calling us to work on. And we partner with other people who have greater expertise on different issues, because, you know, one of the great things about being a network is I don't have to have all the answers for everything. I can turn to my friends like June or other people. In fact, we mentioned sustainable farming a minute ago, and I really want to give a shameless plug to a friend of mine. There's a pastor out in Ohio who's setting up a national network of community sustainable gardens called Goodness Grows.
Oh, fantastic.
Where he's willing to go and his team to areas, to especially, you know, their first focus is going to be working on inner cities, of teaching farming practices, organic farming practices, and helping people to get reacquainted with the earth. Because that's one thing that since the Industrial Revolution, I'm a firm believer of this, the more we lose contact with the creation, especially the good earth, and digging in it with our hands and growing it, the more we don't value it. And I think it's so important to see in elementary schools to have small community plots where people can grow their own carrots and tomatoes and onions and even Brussels sprouts and see what it's like to get your hands dirty, to watch a plant grow and not put tons of nitrogen fertilizer or pesticides on board it, but to pull the weeds by hand and to groom it and care for it. And those are some things that would help us to return to and take charge of our own lives. And that's why I think we need this mixture and balance of having good policies, but personal responsibility and personal accountability.
And it's very true. I mean, the more we're reconnected with how our food is grown and who is growing our food, especially if we're growing it ourselves, not only do we have a financial benefit, I mean, you can't beat the cost of growing your own food, but the bottom line is that you have more of an appreciation for what you have in front of you. And unfortunately, in America, and I know that we have a lot of listeners that are located all over the world, but unfortunately in America, and I say this as a master composter who does a lot of public education, we waste a lot. And if you grow something, you take the time to nurture something, to cultivate it, you're not going to be as quick to waste it. You're going to be more conservative with what you have. And I think that that's also very important, especially when it comes to being responsible for how your food is produced. And also, I just want to mention that there are so many people that live in an urban environment that have rooftop gardens, community gardens in their neighborhood. A lot of people are, what I mentioned before with Sweetwater, they have aquaponics systems that are being built in urban communities where communities can actually grow their own food. I mean, it's fantastic. So, you know, there's always a possibility, regardless of what your situation is, whether you live in a house or you live in a little shoebox apartment, doesn't matter. If you have a windowsill, you can grow something. And even if it's just a few containers, it's still giving you that opportunity to take responsibility for your own food. And, you know, don't forget that there's nothing better than the taste of your own freshly grown organic produce.
Oh, and I agree completely with that. And one of the things that I keep telling people is, if you know the story in Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything.
Mm.
When I was growing up, you know, we didn't eat oranges in the winter. We ate apples in the fall. We ate blueberries in the summer and strawberries in the spring. And they were part of the natural cycle and rhythms of life. And, you know, we weren't importing our apples from South America or our oranges from who knows where.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are things that are very important, that for us to get back into tune of God's creation and not depend on, you know, on shipping everything that, you know, number one, you know, you don't ship an orange or an apple from Chile and have the same quality you do from one that's grown next door.
Oh, certainly not. Not to mention the fact that when it comes to the importation of these crops, and I had Matt McLean on, who's the president of Uncle Matt's Organics. He's a citrus farmer, and he's also the president of the board of directors of the Organic Trade Association. Matt said point blank, the issue that the citrus growers are having with the Asian psyllid is basically because of the fact that as consumers, we've been demanding fruit that is cheaper, that is being imported during peak season, which makes absolutely no sense because citrus in America is, you know, it's number one. So why would we import inferior produce during peak season? It just does not make any sense. But the bottom line is that consumers need to recognize the fact that we don't need to have 10 different varieties of oranges, especially when it's peak season. You know, use what we have locally. You don't know what's happening when it leaves our border. I mean, when it's grown outside of our borders, should I say? And the bottom line is that once we stop that mentality and we start eating what is grown locally, organically, and in season, that's when the change really will begin.
And especially, you know, and also besides the pesticides and other chemicals and how it's grown, we have no idea on the transportation cost of importing vegetables and fruits from so far away. It's just extremely astronomical and unhealthy for all of us, and especially on our planet.
It definitely is, and it all boils down to people reconnecting with the environment, with how things are grown, with how we interact with each other, and, you know, what we're doing as a society to one another.
Absolutely, and I think it's very important for us to reconnect that way.
Mitch, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for spending your birthday with us. And I would like to impose and ask if you would close the show with a special prayer in honor of Good Friday and the upcoming Easter celebration.
I would be happy to. And just real quickly before I go to prayer, one of the things that I'd like to just share is that one of the reasons I do this, if those listeners care to, is turn to John chapter 20 and read the resurrection story in John's gospel and look at where was Jesus resurrected at and who was he recognized as. He came back to life, resurrected in a garden, recognized as a gardener. And most theologians and biblical scholars believe that that is a return to the Garden of Eden. So Jesus is giving us a new opportunity to do it right. And so with that, gracious God, I just thank you for this time to be with June and all of her listeners. Lord, and I ask wherever people are at in their walk with you, that you would just give them a blessed and joyous time this weekend, that you would help us all to see the value in caring for your creation, of how it impacts human life, of how it impacts every child, every person. And Lord, that you would just allow us to find the joy that only you can give. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity. May you bless June. May you bless all her listeners. And I just thank you in the God that I know best, in Jesus the Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mitch. And thank you,
everyone.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Have a great weekend, folks.